Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 110 of the Peak of Sorority podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and joining me, as always, we have my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we're talking mostly more about Dragonflight stuff. We've got a whole new class that we barely even mentioned last week.
Forgot about it.
Lots of new stuff with that new race, of course, that goes with it. And we also have some pretty substantial updates to the profession system. So we're gonna be talking about all of that today. But before we get into that, progression update, which since we were both on Helandris means Helandris update mostly.
It's dead. What a joke of a, like, so I don't know about you, but the first poll on Tuesday we had was through the P2 transition, which was the furthest we'd ever gotten up to that point. We'd never seen the P2 transition. We just sort of YOLO'd our way through it. Ended up in P3 with probably four or five people dead. So we weren't going to kill it that poll. But yeah, the nerfs are absolutely massive. That's a, to be fair, I told a buddy of mine who's not there from a progression perspective yet, but I think that's a 40 pull boss at this point. Maybe even less. It's nowhere near touching 100. You know, I'd say maybe 40, 50 pulls and you kill that thing.
Yeah. I mean, it took us another, 10, maybe 12 pulls to kill it Friday. And we did the same thing as you did. Our first pull into the phase two intermission, I think we reached phase three. If we didn't, it was right at the end of the walk to phase three.
Yeah.
But then spent another 8 pulls just dying to planet cracker beams. You know, the story.
Exactly.
And then killed it. And it's they ruined the boss. It's still a fine boss. It's not the boss that it was. So from a tanking perspective, this was a very intense boss where every single tank beam mattered. You had to hit all of them. If you didn't hit all of them, there was a slim chance you could get lucky and two orbs would spawn in the same place and you could recover.
Yep.
But now we push the boss so fast that you can actually miss half of them.
Yeah.
Because the second set of them won't reach the boss before you push.
Yeah. Yeah, the health nerf, everything from that made those, essentially it's literally, can you do the walk? That's the hard part of the fight now, is can you time? And now with the 30-second duration, you don't, think you pass once, maybe twice in the P2 transition you'll pass, but that was really, before it was the tank, the interface stuff was difficult. There was a slight DPS check in P2 to make sure you made it through that reclaim, right? Or made sure you push him before that reclaim.
Yeah.
But now it's the phase one and phase two, just do enough damage to not get reclaim and you win. And then P3 becomes a difficult one. And it's just making sure you can do the walk the second intermission. So yeah, I mean, I understand. So looking at the nerfs, right? If we go through them, basically the biggest one that people are going to notice is that the bombs now have a 30-second duration, which is triple the amount of time. They typically, you'd have to pass the bombs every 10 seconds. Now you have to pass them every 30 seconds, which is easier, much easier, right? And essentially what it does is it eliminates the difficulty in passing as you're moving, right? That was really where I think a lot of the passing difficulty came, is those intermissions, as you're sort of trying to run, staying ahead of the knockbacks, passing the bombs. And they sort of remove that with the need to only do that maybe once, twice an intermission phase, right? So that's right there. But then on top of that, they nerfed the missile damage by 20%. So to be fair, you probably just need one cooldown. The healing requirement isn't that hard to top between anymore. They reduced his health by 10%, which again just makes missing reclaims now every time so much easier. And then they also, what's Eternity's engine? Is that the AoE damage?
Ticking damage. It's just the ticking damage that's always going on.
Yeah. So, I mean, all of that stuff combined with now P3 being instead of having three areas to cover, you only have two.
Right? Yeah.
It's just, the fight's free. I mean, if you have any amount of pulls into it at this point, you should have killed it this week within 10 to 15 pulls anyway. And then if you're about to start this, like I said, it's a 40 pull boss to get to it. Like,
yeah, I mean, the major thing. So there is one area that we ran into that did still wipe us in the phase two transition. And that was actually people holding onto their bombs for too long. They weren't blowing them up, but if they were holding them on until basically right before a shatter and then dropping them because they couldn't hold them any longer. They had to drop them there. But because it was right before the shatter, right before the shatter went off, then everybody gets knocked away from them and the planet cracker beams come from behind. And now those bombs are inaccessible. And I like superheroed for one with bubble. But you know, you can't save them all. And really, so the solution there was to drop them 5 seconds early and the next person just picks it up.
Yeah.
Because exactly. The other thing about the duration change. So it used to be that the debuff lasted 6 seconds longer than you could hold the bomb, or 60% of the time you could hold the bomb. Now it lasts like what? 2/30? What's that? I can't even math right now. It's not very much. It's like 5% of the time you can hold the bomb.
Yeah.
It's nothing. So there's actually a thing you can do where like, you can just have, and I did this a couple of times, is just like tank does a drive by, picks up the bomb for 2 seconds and then drops it again.
Yep.
And then the other person can just pick it up when their debuff expires.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the one thing we also wiped to that. And we basically did it where everybody just drops their bombs when the wall drops and then everybody else picks it up right after that. Like the second person, then the way it times out is 30 seconds later. I think it's right after the second knock. You can drop and re-pick up before the third knock. And
pick it up,
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the fight was, I get the amount of nerfs, right? And I get why they wanted to do it, but it seemed like they wanted people to move past it quickly, right? Like, this is like the type of nerfs where they were like, we don't want, like, because in a lot of cases, Blizzard will like slow roll nerfs on bosses where they're like slowly bring the difficulty down, that more and more guilds can kill it, right? But here it seemed like they're like, no, we want people to be done and farming this raid before the next season, right? And maybe, and it almost seems, and this is me tinfoil hatting this a little bit, is that it almost seems like they're going to have this expansion ready sooner than we think. This is where my mind goes with stuff like this.
Ian did say alpha was soon. That's, we're going to talk about interview stuff this week or later in the podcast, but Ian did say this week that the alpha was going to be soon without the TM. Yeah. So
right, exactly. Which to me thinks like a May release for that, which means they want to push as many guilds as they can through this content. Which is like these nerfs essentially take this from like Painsmith levels, right? If you think about that, like even the Painsmith nerfs weren't this hard.
The Painsmith nerfs were a joke. Half of them weren't actually like real nerfs.
No, they made it harder.
Yeah.
Or they didn't change the difficulty, right? I guess so.
They just made you relearn it. So the guilds that already did that had to do some reprog, and the guilds that hadn't done it yet had an easier overlap. But I want to pull up the prog stats for this because it's insane. It is insane. I have not seen a chart like this. Like I can pull up, I think I can pull up Jaina, and it's gonna look similar if I have enough Jaina data, but look at this shit. Look at it. Oh, over 150 kills this week.
That's absolutely nuts.
Literally doubled. Just like it's going up, it's going up, it's going up. Big vertical spike.
Yeah.
The week of the nerfs. It's just absolutely gutted the boss. And so Berthikins in chat is saying that, you know, they don't mind heavy nerfs after 3 months into a tier. And I think that misses a little bit with this tier for two reasons, or for this boss for two reasons. First off, a lot of guilds this tier actually didn't start Mythic until 2 or 3 weeks after Mythic opened. Like we were still doing heroic splits, not splits, but like heroic clears for a lot of our raid time for the first 2-3 weeks of Mythic because of how impactful getting that tier gear was. It was just so much more impactful than any Mythic drops. So then the other thing is this boss is just really fun, fun. And the way that it got nerfed removed a lot of the things that were fun about it. This isn't something like if this were Fatescribe, if you literally just took Fate Scribe and you put him here in this raid and you made him as difficult as Halandris was, I would be celebrating about these nerfs. Just absolutely over the moon that I would not have to pull this boss anymore. But I was looking forward to spending 6 hours on Halandris this week. You know, I wouldn't like, I mean, obviously I would like to kill it before the full 6 hours, but I was looking forward to getting to spend more time on this boss because it's fun.
Yeah.
It's really fun. And so the nerfs were so extreme that it just like, it was really disappointing that it took that fun away. And now that fun is just gone. It can't, like, maybe we get it back in season 4, you know, maybe season 4 Halandris is, you know, this big glorious thing that is everything that we all enjoyed about Halandris.
Yep.
But maybe it's just the same thing, but with a random Mythic Plus effect slapped on it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, this just seemed like they could have slow rolled this a little bit. Like maybe the bomb detonation goes to 20 seconds instead of 30, right? You know, maybe they don't make the missile damage as much. They leave the phase 3 pattern in place, right? Like do certain things like that to like slow roll into this, but this just seems like they're trying to it just seems like they were unhappy with the amount of guilds stuck here, but like
they were.
Yeah. Probably.
And I think the other thing, there weren't 150 guilds that just started this boss this week and were stuck on it, or just started this boss this week and then just killed it this week. These are by and large guilds that had been progressing on it, mm-hmm. and then just now it's nerfed and they killed it.
Yeah.
Like us. You know, I was 130 pulls in or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we were like just over 100, like 120 or something like that, I want to say. So, yeah, very similar. Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, The way that they pulled the trigger on this seems pretty, pretty heavy handed, but
yeah.
And the other thing too, and maybe the other thing too that they're seeing in their data, which we might not see, is that like a lot of people have tier sets. They have double legendaries. They have tier sets that are mythic quality, right? Like I have basically, I mean, if I could get a pair of gloves from Mythic Plus, I'd essentially have mythic eye level tier pieces, right, up the board. And so it's the power increase you typically get by slowly getting more gear out of your vault or slowly getting more gear from earlier bosses isn't there. And so maybe we're just going to see similar things to bosses as we get into this, is like, they're needing to levy heavier nerfs because you're not seeing the same power increases as a player.
So I think Halandris is unique in the remainder of the tier in just how much easier it gets when you hit a certain damage threshold. Like, that's when you can skip every reclaim, the boss gets so much easier. Like, the tank mechanic gets so much easier. The reclaim, now you don't have to commit raid CDs to healing the reclaim. Now you commit them to healing the bridge.
Yeah, the intermissions, which is, makes those easier in general.
So something like Lords of Dread is already significantly easier because of both the change that they made to the swarm phase, as well as just, we have more gear. The damage check is not a big deal now.
Exactly.
Anduin doesn't really have a meaningful DPS check. The Rigelon, we were actually talking about maybe 3 tanking Rigelon, so you can tell that the DPS check is not there. So that leaves like the Jailer. But I mean, from everything I've heard, I would rather have Halandris as the end boss than the Jailer as the end boss. And I know if they could wave a magic wand and just move Halandris to boss number 11 in the instance, that would have made me a lot happier. I would have been like, yes, okay, we have to kill these other bosses now so that we can go and do more Halandris.
Exactly. It was a fun boss. I mean, even as a healer, there was always something to do. Like the movement, and like there was never really a boring phase. And now, like, to be fair, other than someone eating random damage they shouldn't, there's not a ton of healing requirements in the phase. And then so it's only the intermissions at that point. Intermissions is all about just positioning. So that's sucks for Halandris, but we did kill it, which was great. And we did start, at least our raid started Anduin progression. Anduin had some nerfs too, a ton of them. So having not progressed on Anduin before this, before the nerfs, I don't know how much this impacts their Anduin pull count. Generally, it'll probably lower it, give you a little bit more leeway, but these did not seem as heavy-handed or as impactful as the Halandris nerfs, right?
It's still fundamentally the same fight. One of the big things it does is the intermission is going to be a little bit easier. That's the big abomination's health got reduced. Mm-hmm. The fiendish souls, the missiles from those that kill people, are slower now, so you have more time to dodge. And that's just going to reduce the amount of random wipes to that. The ad casts in the second phase, they get haste in Mythic when you kill one of the ads. So there's pretty significant, like, you know, you have to keep them CC'd. You have to have a good CC rotation to do this. They reduce the amount of bonus haste they get, which makes it easier, but it's still such a large number. I don't know if it matters.
Yeah.
And then really the big thing is the downstairs phase. The despairs and the doubts have reduced health, which just makes it easier to do that without a blood decay, effectively. It means that now you don't have to optimally stack them to cleave them down in order to get done in time. Right. Now you just have to, like, it's still a decent chunk of HP to chew through, but you can do it with whatever random tanks you've got. And, you know, DK is good, but not mandatory.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, so we started on that one this week. So we got a full Thursday. Well, not even a full, because we also, I don't think you said this on the podcast, we also had Lehuvum issues, but we changed some of our comp. We changed our healing comp a bit. So that, I think, caused some of the wipes. And then, so we took a couple. We didn't clear everything on Tuesday. And then Thursday, we cleaned up Lehuvum and then went to Anduin for probably about 3 hours or so, 3.5 hours. Got some pulls in there. I mean, we're still, as a group, wiping to like the first intermission. Maybe not consistently, but fairly often.
First down phase.
Sorry, first down phase, not intermission. So first down phase. So, and that's like a combination of like either over DPSing the souls and bringing people up early, or not DPSing enough, or like our downstairs team not killing/healing what they need to. So just a lot of stuff there, which in turn means we spent probably the last 45 minutes swapping groups so that our typical second group went down first so that they would have more practice, which again caused more issues because CD timers are all messed up. So it's just, it was a lot of wipes. However, I was not there. So I'll have to basically live progression through you on Anduin at this point.
Yeah. I mean, my understanding is that the pulls on Anduin are pretty front loaded. Like so I hadn't even thought about this, but there's no blasphemy in phase two or phase three. There's the hopelessness thing in phase three, but the blasphemy mechanic is one of the like major sources of wipes, of just like, you know, you touch a safe person and now you both blow up and now somebody else can't clear and they die. And, you know, it's just, just cascades. That's one of the major areas that you wipe. One of the other ones is like you were talking about with the downstairs, just like killing stuff, the lost souls too quickly, not killing them quickly enough, not getting your CC out on them, or missing kills or heals downstairs, which is identical in phase one and phase two. So once you've done it in phase one, you can just do it again in phase two.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the pulls on Anduin seem fairly front loaded. We shall see. I have zero pulls on Anduin. We killed Helandros. We had a little bit of issues on our side with Liavim as well. The classic people not quite getting onto their stack markers in time. So even though they were there on their screen, the server disagreed and killed everyone.
Oh, jeez. Gotcha. Game don't lie. That's how I respond to that. Whenever someone in my raid says I was there, I'm like, game don't lie.
Yeah, it's really just like, so what you see on your screen is, you know, whatever your latency is to the server, it's that much ahead of the server.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you get there at just at the very last moment, well, the server says you were still a tenth of a second away.
Yeah, exactly.
If that's what your latency is. So it's not something that you can play being at the last second. So it wasn't that much. We wiped like seven times on it, but seven times when you're actually getting the, you know, 8 and 9 minute pulls and almost getting to the end, and then two of your stacks just evaporate because their orange marker didn't make it to them.
Yeah, no, that's rough. I always forget, like we talked about this, but I always forget how long that fight is. Because it doesn't seem long when you're in it, but like when you're done with it, you're like, damn, that was like a 9-minute fight. And like,
yeah.
No, that's for sure. So, well, cool. And then I guess there were some jailer nerfs. I'm going to just finish this off. There was a handful of jailer nerfs. I think these are just to make the general fight easier. I don't think, again, these are major changes. It's just
a sneaky brewmaster DPS nerf in this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Jailer's melee attack decreased by 10% in mythic difficulty.
Ah, okay. So no Ni Zhao shenanigans.
Ni Zhao gets worse. It's actually a pretty noticeable change in how much damage you get out of invoked Ni Zhao. Kind of sucks, but
I'm sorry that as a tank you do less damage when you're only there to take damage, get beat up. So
you say that until the tank's the one getting you through the DPS check. I played on Halandra's progression 3 different Paladin Covenants. That was fun. Oh, I started off as Necrolord in order to do healing in the second intermission, because I was also going to be taking the intermission, and Necrolord lets you do both. Gotcha. And then we needed to push the DPS check for Reclaim. So I switched to Venthyr. Okay. So I ate the DPS loss, held my Ashen for phase 2, dropped Ashen and Wings on phase 2, and just went nuts.
Yeah.
And then the DPS nerf, or all the nerfs went in, and I was like, well, we can do whatever now. The highest DPS thing is for me to push Blessing of Summer on one of our Boomkin, who are now also playing Venthyr. So I switched to Nightfae. Nice. And then we missed the DPS check in phase 2 because we had front-loaded all of our DPS in phase 1. So I switched back to Venthyr.
Gotcha. And then we killed it. That's hilarious. Nice. All 3. Look at that. Blizzard probably loves you. They're like, look at this. Mm-hmm. People changing covenants. That's awesome.
Oh, I'm sure they're a huge fan.
Exactly. All right. Well, then let's maybe move a little bit forward. And we've got a couple of things from this week that were announced that are talked about. So going in to the hotfix, or sorry, to this week's resets, is there's a bunch of DPS adjustments or just class changes going in. So talk about the monk one. Windwalker, all abilities are increased by 4%. So a nice little 4% aura bonus. Doesn't apply in PvP, but so in PvE, you'll see both a little bit stronger single target, definitely some stronger AoE damage. And a bunch of other classes received 4% bonuses too, which makes me wonder if Blizzard developers just check boxes and they're like, we can only do one number at a time and we'll make it 4% and that works for everybody.
Rogues got a 3% one.
Oh, well, I mean, whatever. It's Rogues. Sorry, but Outlaw, yeah. I guess, yeah, did get a 3% damage
increase. The one that we really got to talk about is the Blood nerf.
Blood Decay nerf. Leaving that one off to the side.
Yeah, so Blood Decay, best sims I saw were around 15k DPS, which, if you're not familiar, that's DPS, player DPS levels. Mm-hmm. 15k DPS is a lot. That's not how much people were actually doing in practice, because, you know, sims, optimal situations and everything like that. But they were doing pretty good numbers. Like, Blood Decay's keeping up with, like, the lower end of your DPS was not uncommon.
Right, yeah.
And the whole way that works is that basically the short version is that their tier set gives them extra duration on Dancing Rune Weapon. Dancing Rune Weapon gives them a stacking strength buff. So if you can maintain Dancing Rune Weapon for an extended period of time, you get to keep this 75% strength buff for a long time. And when you have 75% more main stat, it turns out you do a lot more damage. So the nerf is reducing the bonus duration on Dancing Rune Weapon from 0.5 seconds each time you heart strike to 1/3 second each time you heart strike, which is a pretty big DPS nerf. It's about 20 to 25%. Also, pretty significant hit to their survivability too, because Dancing Rune Weapon, while it was a major DPS element this patch, also just gives you a whole lot of parry chance. Just like a huge amount of parry chance, which, of course, when you don't get hit by things, you are tankier.
Makes it a little bit easier.
So this is going to increase the amount of damage they take. There's a lot of outcry over this because of the size of the nerf. Like, their DPS needed this nerf. Their survivability didn't necessarily need this nerf. So what we might see, might, emphasis on the might here, is them switching their nerf out for one, like, to the strength stacks instead. Like, nerfing, like, reducing... Yeah. Reducing the cap of the strength stacks or something similar to achieve the same DPS nerf, but without the nerf to the Dance and Rune weapon duration.
Right.
We shall see. It has sort of upended our plans because we were actually going to, like, our hypothetical Rigelon comp was going to be two blood DKs and then me on whatever tank made sense for debuffs. And the blood DKs were just going to be basically DPS. DPS that can taunt and take the tank mechanic, and it was going to be great because they're just DPS.
Yeah, exactly. Not gonna happen anymore. That's for sure.
But this does also mean, like, it's probably worth, like, we have the option. We just switched tanks, so we have the option where our new tank could play Blood DK or they could play Brewmaster. And with this change, it's probably worth it for them to play Brewmaster on the Jailer instead of Blood DK because of the survivability nerfs. Mm-hmm. And the Jailer has this nice 2.5 second or some shit auto attack speed, and the auto attacks they're one shot level. Just every auto attack is like one shot level. So with a Blood DK, that's a problem. With a Brewmaster, it's not.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I saw the tweets. The Twitter was abound with some comments about just the buffs and nerfs in general, but the Blood DK ones being the mass ones, which is why I let you introduce it, because I didn't really know. I know it was big, I just didn't know how big. So sucks to be a Blood DK. I mean, play a real class, like, I don't know, Mistweaver Monk. So next up we have sort of similar vein of World of Warcraft, but a little bit outside of it, is there is a presentation this Tuesday by Blizzard on the new World of Warcraft, Warcraft mobile game. So set in the Warcraft universe, we are getting a mobile game. Wow.
No idea what it is. We can kind of combine this in the next one because we had some leaks.
Put them together.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, so there was a little bit of a leak. Basically, our good friend Jason Schreier, Mr. Leak over there, basically mentioned that there were two types of games in development: Pokemon Go like Warcraft game, and then a Clash of Clans like Warcraft game. The Pokemon Go version or game has been canceled based on all the reports coming out. So really, we're looking at a Clash of Clans style mobile game. Which, if you haven't played it, it's sort of like the classic. You like build up a base, like get you more resources, then like you fight people in like this three lane sort of thing where you send out certain units and they send out units, and it's, I don't know. Yeah. If you played Clash of Clans, you get it. So that's what they're saying. It's going to be like a Clash of Clans style game, which is fine. I mean, like, good for Blizzard finally tapping into the mobile market, because it's literally larger than every other entertainment industry in the world at this point. So
I think we mentioned this last week as well, but Diablo Immortal is soon.
Oh yeah, so Diablo Immortal got their release date on mobile. I think it's early June, but at the same time they're also doing a PC beta for it. Yeah. Which I mean Diablo Immortal, I think, is a mobile first experience. The PC client is essentially just the phone client that Blizzard's officially supporting on a PC, so the experience isn't any different. It's
like a Unity game, right?
Exactly. And the idea is, like, your progression stays across any format you play it. So if you play it on mobile versus PC, it's the same character progression and stuff like that for Diablo Immortal. So there's no difference. Generally speaking, they're not doing anything special for the PC version, they said. It's literally just the mobile client that runs on your PC. So still a mobile first game, which, I mean, a lot of people are going to be maybe slightly upset with Blizzard, but like, there's so much money in mobile games nowadays that like you have to. You want to stay afloat as a game company. Put some stuff out there.
The one thing I would be concerned about is, like, I'm sure they can make a good mobile game. The question is just, how are they going to monetize it? That's the question in my mind. Because there's a lot of predatory monetization. And in some ways, Blizzard actually pioneered some predatory monetization with the loot boxes in Overwatch. Like, Overwatch was one of the first big mainstream games to use those. So curious what that is going to look like.
Yep.
And we, I guess we will see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how, I mean, I would say that like Diablo Immortal seems like it's very much a like contained experience. So like, I don't see how they monetize that other than like an upfront cost for the game, right? Yeah. If this new Warcraft game is Clash of Clans, like you can expect like money to like, basically it's pay, people call it pay to win, but I feel like that's not the particular case you get. Like it's more of like pay to progress faster, you could say. So like you pay to, like, win. At that, well, yeah, I guess it depends on, because I know that, so I know I've read a couple of like studies on the way Clash of Clans does this. This isn't the Blizzard game, but if it's like this style game, Clash of Clans does this thing, which is super predatory, which is they basically match you initially against people who are bad or like bots, and you'll win. And then as you play more, you'll start to fight people around your level. And then as you get even deeper in, they start matching you with people that have spent a bunch of money. So the only way for you to actually beat those people is to also spend money. And so they prey on that fact of you getting frustrated for losing so much that you'll spend money. So I don't know if Blizzard ends up doing that in terms of like the player, or like the, how,
that's the kind of thing that's like very difficult to suss out without a study like that.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
That's even more predatory than I realized. Cause I already knew like there was the pay to win elements of Clash of Clans, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's another level. That's another level.
Yeah. If I can remember, I'll send you a link to what I read, but yeah, the idea was like at a certain point you start just playing people who have spent more money than you, or at least are always more progressed than you. So you get upset and you spend money to like get to their level. Yeah. Fun times in the mobile game space. I think too, like there's a lot of people who give mobile games a bad rap, but like it's all because of those concepts. There are very good games that are only on phones that are just like, you pay like a single cost for it. Like I can say like Monument Valley is a game that like you buy it once and you play it. It's a very cool, like
there's a couple puzzle game. Like really great puzzle games. Yeah. Like Monument Valley that are just amazing. There's also, I wonder if there's a mobile version of this. There's a game, I just picked it up on Steam yesterday. Hang on. Dwarf Romantic. It is a little city building puzzle game that is very zen, and I enjoy it a lot. And I actually hadn't thought of maybe the, like if it's available on my phone, I'm going to buy it again because I got it for like $8. So it's worth it. But that kind of thing, you know, there's absolutely gems like that in the mobile space.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what Blizzard comes out with, but I think people are going to maybe give it a bad rap off the cuff, just like they did to Diablo Immortal, which to be fair, everything that I've heard of people who have played it is that it's actually a very good game. Not knowing much about how it's monetized, but like the game itself, people seem to be enjoying it that have played it. So take that for what it is. Cool. Well, that's really the outside of WoW stuff to touch on this. There really wasn't much. I mean, the nerfs were the biggest thing that we've already talked through, both from a fight perspective in the raid and then also sort of the class buffs and nerfs there. There's a couple of 9.2.5 things that came out before we get into our main topic. A couple of data mined items. So the biggest one is that Blizzard has included, based on the strengths, we don't know how this is going to be included, how it's going to be presented, but there's a new social contract that they've set up where it's something that you have to accept before you're actually allowed in the game. And so WoWhead's got the full text available for what's based on the strings that are in the new client. But essentially, it's like you just don't be rude and an asshole in game is what you're sort of accepting to do. And so it seems like a good thing to put in front of players. It also seems like this is potentially a much easier way for them to clean up the community. Meaning like previously they've been very like, If you say a lot of hurtful things or hateful things in chat, you will eventually get banned, right? If you get enough reports against you, this seems like a very easy way to say, hey, you accepted this, you get one shot and like, that's it, right? And then you're done. Like then like they can basically increase like the ban and timeout time much quicker, right?
I don't think they'll necessarily do that, but this is a good way of giving the community ammunition to self-police. Like before things escalate to being ban-worthy, like if everybody's on the same page with this thing, then they can self-police to a greater degree. Not saying that necessarily will happen, but it is something that could result from this. Mm-hmm. One thing I do think is interesting in this thing is it does So one of the things they have in the behaviors that are not accepted is spamming, advertising, or other disruptive behaviors. Advertising in particular stuck out to me because of all, like, we still have advertising, of course, for sales, for raids and Mythic Plus and things like that. So,
right.
Curious if that means anything or if it's like intended to be smaller in scope than all advertising. Because in some ways, like, you know, a blacksmith advertising that, hey, I can craft this thing in trade chat is advertising, but it's clearly not what they mean here.
No, and I think this is much more the idea of like advertising, maybe not even like gold runs on server, but more right. like go to this website and purchase a boost
yeah.
and like then yeah. we'll boost you, right? It's like that type of thing that I think they're really targeting with it. Yeah. But they do leave it slightly ambiguous in terms of like what they mean. So it'll be, I mean, again, new social contract. We'll see exactly how it manifests itself, like how you actually have to accept it, where it shows up and like you just log in one day and you get it once and that's it, or is it like every month you have to like accept it? So we'll see. But yeah. it's interesting that they're putting that in there. I guess the other thing, I don't want to, we'll skip the next note, Emelson, behind the scenes. Yeah. We'll go to the third one, which is they're going to add in apparently the same CM ports that they have, or I guess it's the do 20s, all 20s yeah. ports where you can port to a dungeon. They're adding that to the raids, actually. So as a part of season four, it looks like if you clear a raid on Mythic with the faded affix active, you gain access to a port that'll take you directly to the entrance of that raid, which is a nice little touch. I think there's some other things too. There's like a pet you can earn and maybe a mount you can earn, I want to say. But the ports are interesting that they're going to add this to, like, basically raid achievements, which they haven't really done. So.
Yeah. And it looks like it's all or nothing. So right now they are awarded for the Mythic achievement for completing all three raids okay. in season four. So either you get all three of them or you get none of them. I don't think that really matters unless the tuning is like really wild on this stuff. So we'll see. I'm still like hoping that they tune them to be not too bad in terms of like time spent progressing.
Mm-hmm. Not agreed.
But we will see.
Yes. Yeah. We'll see what they say. So,
wraps up. I think that wraps up this week's stuff. Finally, we spent a lot of time on Halandras. We're about 50 minutes into this episode.
40 yeah, minutes yeah, yeah. Episode. 40 minutes in. So it's been Halandras nurse. I think we're a bit big. So we had to yeah. spend some time getting
that. We had to give the crab god a good send off. But it is now time to talk Dragonflight stuff. So we have some interview stuff that we're going to touch on kind of as it comes up, I think, more so than anything else.
Exactly.
You want to get started with Evoker or with the profession stuff?
Let's do the profession stuff, because then that might be a little bit quicker. Maybe a little bit. I think it's interesting. I think it's actually the more interesting of the two things. While new class is always cool, I think this profession stuff is super cool. So so basically Blizzard, as a part of their announcement last week, talked about a huge profession revamp, essentially making it more progression, like adding additional progression on top of just getting a higher profession level so you can make the next sort of, you know, sort of recipe. So they talked about a couple different things in this whole thing. So I'll try and correlate my thoughts together. So one of the first things they added was essentially like almost like an XP bar, very similar to how they did legendary items today, but for specific items. So you can basically, if you craft a bunch of helms, you will become a better helm crafter. So the next time you craft that helm, it will have a higher quality, which I would assume turns into more stats, higher item level, better stats, basically. So the idea is like it gives people who are very into the crafting system the ability to like target and say, yes, I want to be focused on like male helms. I want to be the male helm maker on my server and be known for that for whatever reason. Like, I personally don't get it, but I did enjoy way back in the day when they used to do like profession masteries, I guess would be the best way to start it. Where I think this was BC era where you had
potion master,
or flask master, or like what was the other one? It was potion, flask, and there was one other one for alchemy. But then the weapons were the big one where you had like mace mastery, sword mastery, or like, and if you did the mace one, you got that mace that stunned and was ridiculous with warriors.
Stun Herald.
Yeah. So I think going back there is really cool, because I think that's a cool part about professions is that, and this is sort of what I've always talked about in terms of what I always enjoyed about older WoW, is that like there's a bit of exclusivity in terms of like what you have, which I think is better in general for the game. Like it sucks as an individual. And I'll say, like, I don't disagree with, like, if as a person, I want to be the best at everything on one character. I think that is not a feasible thing anymore. Like, I don't think you can do that. Yeah. I think the game becomes too watered down if you can be the best at everything at one character. But if you put in time and you have like two crafters and one's going to be like your helm maker, that is going to be like your shoulder maker, you can like be the best there. Right. Or if you're like a psychopath and you put in hundreds of hours into one character, maybe you can get there with everything. But the idea,
they did clarify, like, so basically we're getting, there's a couple other things to crafting beyond this like XP bar thing. So we're getting crafting stats, which is going to mean that you're going to have, you know, specific crafting gear that you put on while you're doing your crafts in order to make better items, or make more items, as it is probably going to be the case with like potions and flasks and things like that. But also, we're going to be having, this is light on details at this time, but some kind of like crafting talents, kind of like you're getting at with the masteries, where you're going to start out, you're going to have a limited number of them. But then over the course of time, you can ultimately get all of them from what they've said. So it's like you can complete everything on that character, but you're probably not going to be able to complete everything on that character in the first 2 weeks of the patch when, you know, a lot of the sales are. So you have to pick, you know, if you want to be the helm guy, you need to be the helm guy the first 2 weeks of the patch. And later on, you can get the shoulders and the chest and the legs and the boots and, you know, whatever, exactly, if you want them. But yeah, this seems pretty good. One of the things that I've really enjoyed, back in Cataclysm, I was doing Inscription a lot, and new patch came out, tons of new minor cosmetic glyphs, and I had two of the really popular ones, and I was one of the only people on the server that had those recipes, and it sucked in that it was just luck. Yeah. I just got lucky and in my Inscription research for the day pulled the glyphs that were, you know, desired.
Oh, that's, I remember how they did that. Yeah, the research cards. Yeah.
Yeah. So that sucked, and then it was just getting lucky, and I got lucky, and if I hadn't gotten lucky, it would have been really shitty. But being, you know, one of the only people on the server that had that was neat, because that gave me something that was, you know, mine.
Yeah.
Eventually, everybody had them. But for that first couple of weeks, when I was the only person that had, you know, I don't even remember what the glyphs were at this point. but when I was the only person that had these like neat new glyphs, that was cool. And so this seems in many ways like that, where if you're on a large server, especially, you're probably not going to be the only helm person. But there's not going to be that many. There's going to be enough different things that people will want to specialize in that if you say, I'm going to make the best helms, you know, at the very least, you're going to be like the helm guy in your guild. There's going to be reason for there to be more than one blacksmith in the guild. It's not going to be the most efficient option, is not going to be for your guild to funnel all of the materials to one individual crafter.
Right. Yeah.
Like it was in Shadowlands.
Exactly. Yeah. That, and then the other thing too, that they're adding back in, which I find funny, is crafting tables. So like the idea, if people aren't aware, you used to, on certain items, have to go to a specific item, like specific area of the world that had this table where you could only craft those items if you were near that table. For the original implementation of this in Classic, was there was a table in Blackwing Lair where you could only craft flasks, like certain flasks, which is great. I loved having to go like clear Blackwing Lair, get to this table, and craft stuff there, which was fun. But
it's going to be a little bit more convenient. You know,
it'll be able to. It sounds like they're going to put them in the major cities or the major city, right? So it'll be a little bit easier to get to than having to clear a raid instance. But no, this is another cool thing where you might have like the crafting area and people sort of congregate around that. It's like, it's a simple inconvenience, but the idea is if like, you already have this inconvenience if you're a blacksmith and you want to like armor craft, or if you're a smelter and you want to smelt, or if you're a cooker and you want to cook, right? It's like adding it to other professions just isn't a huge deal, right? I'm assuming like the only time I can see this being slightly annoying, and I don't even think it's that bad, is like if you need to make a bunch of potions for a raid, like in the middle of a raid.
I also think it depends on what the limitations are, right? Like if for example, if it's something where, let's say for alchemy, in order to maximize the efficiency of like how many potions you get per craft, you have to be at the table. Right, but then you can craft out in the world, but you're getting, you know, 70% of the amount or 50% of the amount you would get at the table. That's okay, because you can still like, oh, we need a flask real quick. Like, just make the flask.
You know? Exactly. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, you're good. that, like, I think it's, there's a matter, like a question of degrees here. Like, the tables could just be effectively a massive skill boost. Like, if you're at the table, you know, these crafting stats, it just gives you a huge boost to your crafting stats. And then there's probably going to be some that are required for, like, crafting items, like, that are good, you know, crafting gear that is good is going to effectively require these tables.
So. It'll be interesting to see how they implement it, because I know in the old way, the old way they used to use them is you couldn't make the item without being near the table. So it's interesting to see that same restriction. But yeah, and then I guess the other sort of thing I wanted to talk about, which is really my favorite part of the new professions, are the work orders. So, which this is, I think, probably the biggest change. Like, the other stuff seems like massive changes to professions, but I think work orders or crafting orders, I think is what they're calling them, is massive. It's essentially the ability to, as a buyer, post on the auction house that you want something made. And it could be a soulbound item, which is actually huge, right? So, like, a typically alchemy soulbound item, you can post, you want to make this made, but you post in the auction house that I want to make this, I want this made. You can post I think you can post a price where like I'll tip you this much, or it's including or not including certain materials too. So like you could just say I don't have any materials and the price that you're willing to pay for this craft is higher. So like the idea is it's the ability to get those sort of soulbound items, or to basically post and say, hey, I need 100 potions made. Can someone do this for me?
Yeah.
And then as a alchemy person, you know, as an alchemist, you can make those and then sort of fill that work order. Which I think is it's a cool way of getting out of this trade chat, like spamming sort of thing, right?
Yeah. The other thing is, this is the biggest thing that they have done to dunk on auction house goblins in a long time. Like the way that Shadowlands Legendaries worked was the opposite of this. It was like auction house goblins heaven, because the buy-in cost to make legendaries was so high that you needed a huge amount of capital in order to even enter the market. You needed to be able to eat the cost and then be able to continue selling the legendaries after.
Yep.
This is the opposite. You can be just a crafter and make just an item. You can log on and be like, I'm going to go check, you know, the auction house and see what people are looking for. And somebody's like, you're a helm guy. Somebody lists a helm that they're looking for. And you can be like, oh, I can go make that. And then just make it. And you don't have to deal with the whole cancel scanning thing that people do. You don't have to deal with having an inventory and managing that inventory. And like, when is it correct to just vendor it because the relisting costs are too high? You know, there's all these things that go into actually like making a lot of gold on the auction house that this just sidesteps all of it. It lets people do little bits of dabbling in the auction house to use their professions to make gold. In a way that doesn't, you know, you don't have to set up Trade Skill Master for this.
Exactly.
You don't need to invest all this time in setting up this complicated auctioning infrastructure in order to sell your one item on the crafting order. Like, you can just do it. This is huge. This is really big.
And it's also helpful too. Like, if you do the whole, like, the other thing too that I'm thinking about is like from an enchanting perspective, like typically if you're an enchanter, like you'll have a bunch of mats and like you'll be able to make enchants and sell them. But like as an individual who doesn't have an enchanter, I might just pick up enchanting mats through, like, if I'm in a run and something gets to eat and I win the roll, I'll get that enchanting mat. And now do I just sell it or do I hold on to it? And then I can put it into my next enchant.
You remember like we had BOP crafting materials in basically every expansion from the Burning Crusade. It might have been in Classic too, but the Burning Crusade until BFA. Shadowlands doesn't have any, but you remember those like title cores or whatever they were in
BFA?
Exactly,
yeah.
And how many of those you ended up with, and like same thing, the like Legion Blood things in Blood of Sargeras or whatever it was in Legion, they just like stacked up and stacked up and stacked up, and then like 7.2 they added the vendor that you could turn them into other materials that you could actually use because like alchemists just didn't have a use for them.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, this is, I mean, this basically gives that sort of, yeah, you're right. It kills God, like some of the work that Goblin's going to do, but it also lets me as like, even as just like an alchemist who I have alchemy for two reasons. Number one, it's so I can quickly make pots if I run out, so I don't have to like ask somebody for them. And it's so I get 2-hour flasks. I don't sell anything on the auction house. I very rarely do Shadestone transmutes. I always forget in the current stuff. But like this lets me basically go on to the auction house and be like, okay, is anybody looking for pots I can make? Maybe I can make a couple extra gold, right?
Yeah. It can be like, okay, I'm running low on gold. Let me go check the auction house and be like, oh, okay, you know, these helms that I can craft, or these chest pieces that I can craft, or these potions that I can craft, there's somebody that wants them right now. I can go and make those and immediately, you know, get the gold.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Like, that's the other thing too, is like anybody who's dealt with the inscription market knows that some glyphs sell like hotcakes and some glyphs don't sell at all. And the prior to Trade Skillmaster, the only way to find that out was to make them all and list them all and find out the hard way that some of the ones that you spent your expensive materials on are worthless.
Aren't going to sell. Yeah.
When you flip the script and it's a work order instead, you can just look and go, oh, there's 3,000 people wanting this glyph and 2 wanting this one.
Yeah. Seems important. Yeah. Yeah. And I think Berth here in chat brings up a good point. It basically makes it, and I think I just sort of said this, it's like, we don't care about making money through professions, but you want to make a little gold through it. These work orders are great for just seeing like, what do people want? It's like, 20 minutes make, you know, maybe it's not hundreds of gold. Maybe it's only 50 gold, right? Because that's all you get from a commission perspective, but it's still enough. It also lets you bleed off excess materials too. Like as an inscriptionist, like I finally have as an enchanter, I finally started selling just the raw materials because I can't, number one, I don't care what enchants are good. I'm not going to do the research. So I just sell the raw materials. And now I just like, two stacks of dust, a stack of purple shards and a stack of blue shards. Anything else I get, I just sell. Typically I'm a pack rat and I save that till the end of expansion, but like.
Yeah, I have a bunch of materials in my regent bank. I had to clear some out recently because I was running out of backspace.
Yeah. So now it's like, this is an easy way to like dump materials. Even like if people don't have the raw materials and they just want something crafted, you can quickly dump it and, you know.
Yeah.
Do it that way.
So. I mean, you also just, you think about this from a perspective like Berthier was hitting at, of just a regular player. They're not, you don't want to make all the gold. Like making all the gold, of course, would be nice, but you don't need to make all the gold. The goblin, the auction house goblin makes all the gold.
Exactly. Yeah.
You just want to make enough gold to pay for the things that you want to get. You know, you want to be able to pay for your potions. You want to be able to pay for your enchants and your food and all of this stuff that you want for the content that you do. This gives you a way to make some gold.
Exactly. Yeah.
This also, we also kind of relate to that. We know there's no mission table in Shadowlands or in Dragonflight, which is a pretty good passive gold source if you invest time in running it. But a lot of people don't because it's, I don't know, they don't like it. They don't enjoy it. You know, it's out of the way. You have to go back to your order hall and do it.
I'm excited for these profession changes for sure. I think it's the largest overhaul they've done since they started to do the expansion specific progression, right? And then sort of dropped all the like specialization stuff and sort of homogenized a lot of it. So it'll be it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I think it'll be a good change personally, but we'll see how people enjoy it as they start to play with it a little bit. So, well, cool. So that's on the profession. And do you have anything else on professions before we jump to some other minor announcement they did?
Yeah, this all sounds great to me. I'm very excited about this. I don't have the patience anymore for doing auction house stuff. The auction house game is just lost. I don't care enough to spend all that time working with TSM and doing all this stuff. So this appeals to me very directly because I still like doing crafting.
Right.
I just don't like doing crafting enough to deal with setting up TSM to actually make gold off of it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, my auction house experience now is using, I think it's like, there's some auction light add-on where like I just go to the sell tab, click the thing, and it shows me what the current price is. And I just say list it for whatever the current price is.
Yeah. Yeah. I use that too. It's just like, that's like great for selling the raw materials. Not so great to figure out if it's worth turning those raw materials into an item to sell.
Exactly. Which I don't, to be fair, I just want to get it out of my bags. Like,
So, but yeah, this all sounds great to me. I'm very, very happy. Like, this is like, obviously this is a kind of a media PR blitz for them. They want people to be excited about the expansion, but genuinely I am excited about the features and the changes that they have announced for Dragonflight. It's not just like, it's good because they say it's going to be good. It sounds good to me because it solves a problem that I have. So I'm excited.
No, yeah, the profession stuff will be super, super interesting to see how it's even the other stuff. I think the work orders is like the coolest part of it. As soon as they announced it, I literally screamed, I think, to the people I was watching it with, like, this is the greatest thing ever. But the rest of the profession changes, we'll see how they play out. It's always, I think that's the one thing that, like, if you go back in the day, this might be the last comment I have on this, is like, there were expansions that focused heavily on like crafting progression as a viable means of progressing in the game, right? Like
Warlords Star Wars,
Warlords. But even like if you think of a whole game around it, like Star Wars Galaxies did this very well in terms of like little player cities, and like you'd have your one vendor, and that vendor was an actual person, like a player, and like they would sell something like an item or a group of items that they had worked on crafting and leveling up and stuff like that. So I don't know if WoW ever gets there with professions, but this seems like a good enough direction to give, like, if you care about professions, like enough of
a lot of the kind of second wave of MMOs had a very fleshed out crafting system. Like, you know, the first wave, the Ultima Online and the EverQuest kind of games, not as much. There was crafting, like Ultima Online had crafting, like it was a major element. But it wasn't fleshed out in the way that Star Wars Galaxy was. Anarchy Online had a very fleshed out crafting system.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
There was basically a class that's like a big part of its class identity was bonuses to crafting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then, you know, the more modern ones kind of moved away from that. But even games like Final Fantasy 14. Has a very fleshed out crafting system.
I do hear people mentioning something. There's like this expansion with Final Fantasy is bad because it's like an odd number in terms of points or something or level on crafting. Somebody was complaining about it being a weird number. Anyway, I know nothing about that dumb game.
It's just, well, crafting professions in Final Fantasy, because of the way that like your character can be every class at once, all of their crafting professions are actually just classes, and they have abilities and things that you use while crafting. So it's actually much more fleshed out than even what we're going to get here. I don't think what Final Fantasy does is necessary for most people's level of engagement with crafting. But, you know, there are people who love that, and more power to them.
Fair enough. All right, so I think we've drained our profession maybe discussion for today, and let's move over to the new Invoker class, I guess. So one thing I think we mentioned on last week's podcast but spent zero time on it, because I don't think you or I either wanted to deep dive into it, because it's just an announcement of it with no real detail behind it. But they did announce basically two things. They announced a new class and a new race. Essentially, they're the same thing, because Drakthyr is a race, can only be Invokers, and Invokers as a class can only be a Drakthyr. So, like, essentially, it's a race-class combo sort of deal. But similar to the way, like, the original monks, you could be not pandas. So, bad example.
Monks
so
could be anything. The closest analog is actually, in some ways, it is actually the races from Burning Crusade. Where got Draenei, and the only shaman on Alliance were Draenei. Mm-hmm. The only paladins on the Horde were Blood Elves. The other one
actually in classic Druids could only be Tauren or Night Elves.
Night Elf, and that's not exactly a one-to-one relationship. Like, it's Demon Hunters have that same thing where like only Night Elves and Blood Elves can be Demon Hunters. but they can all be other classes too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Evoker and Drakthyr are one and the same right now. Although Ian did indicate that they were open to allowing Drakthyr to be other classes, which makes sense because there's not really a reason that you couldn't have a Drakthyr warrior. Like, warrior is just me, big, me, smash, right? Like, there's not a lot of special requirements there. If we can have a gnome warrior, we can have a Drakthyr warrior. Exactly. Which I guess for those that maybe have missed it, Drakthyr are just humanoid dragon things. Like, if you've seen, if you remember, there's that boss in Blackwing Descent. There's a Drakthyr boss in Blackwing Descent. I don't remember its name, but they've popped up here and there. It's that kind of thing where, you know, bipedal, standing up, Argonian looking, like if you've played this, the Elder Scrolls games, kind of lizard people with wings that you can use to glide. It's like a racial ability. You can glide with them. You can't fly with them. Like a demon hunter, you cannot fly with them, but you can glide.
Yep. Yes. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's so what the because Drakthyr in WoW have been pretty rare, I think a lot of people don't realize that they have actually shown up. Like, this is not the first we're seeing this style of draconic thing in WoW.
So they were, and to be fair, I want to say they were actually, maybe they weren't called Drakthyr, but in Blackwing Lair, there are bipedal dragon, like massive dragon things that swing like a polearm at you.
Big,
Yeah, and they guard certain, like, I think they guard the room heading into Chromaggus. There's like three of them there that you fight after Ebonrock and Flame Gore or whatever. They have been in the game, not in this style, we'll say. So the, this style is much smaller, much more humanoid, I'd say, or human-like. But yeah, no, it's they've been around, so it'll be So we have Drakthyr, we basically have dragon dudes, people. Which is, I think, is cool. So a new race, which will be fun. And then Invoker is a class, basically another two spec class, which is just like demon hunters were. Only this time it's damage and healer
and range DPS. So no tank, thankfully. Like I commented in our speculation episode, I didn't want them to add another tank because they still haven't figured out how to make Vengeance like good. Not good in like a numbers level, because it's been good in a numbers level multiple times, but good in like a distinct mechanical identity way. And like Death Knight is the Deathstrike tank, and Paladin is the Wog shield utility tank, and Brewmaster is the tank that doesn't die ever at all under any circumstances.
Good Brewmasters. So I mean, we're only getting a ranged attack and a ranged healer spec. So that'll be interesting. It's funny too. So like they had a couple intro videos, and so they showed off some of the like animations and casting abilities. And I don't know about you, but I was a little upset, I'll say, about the fact that their damage dealing abilities were very red, right? And their healing abilities were very green. However, the Red Dragonflight, literally Alexstrasza is known as the Life Binder, essentially like the Dragonflight that gives life. So why is everything green? Because green is, of course, Ysera, and like the green Dragonflight, which is very much like the mystery people, right? Aren't they like the Emerald Dream type Dragonflight? So
I'm a little upset about that. So the Red Dragonflight, also known for fire,
right? But healing fire,
healing fire, which would have been a neat aesthetic, also might have been a little bit visually confusing with all the other things that are setting you on fire.
That's exactly why they did it. Like, I can tell, like, that's exactly why they did it. Just from a visual perspective, it's like, green is typically good, red's typically bad. They can't make red circles on the ground that you want to step in because it's healing you be a thing. Like, it just doesn't.
Yeah.
Doesn't work that way. So, no, it's more of a joke. But
I think there is a little bit of legitimacy to that, though, which is why it's a good joke. because you're right. The Red Dragonflight has been, you know, Alexstrasza the Lifebinder. They've been, like, if you've played through Dragonblight in Wrath of the Lich King, like, you've interacted with the Red Dragonflight and their dragon shrines in Dragonblight.
Yeah.
And seen that. So
in the healing fire. Yeah. It's just funny, but no. So we get this new class. It's a ranged damage dealer and a ranged healer. They're also mail wearers, if we talked about last time, which will be the first new mail class ever in the game.
It's actually so you remember way back in the day, Paladin Warrior started off wearing mail and then progressed into wearing plate.
Yep.
So in some ways, we've regressed also from like the utility of mail, although it was never an endgame thing, because even in vanilla you progressed out of wearing mail before you hit level 60. So but it is kind of funny.
Yeah. And that was, and then like similarly, like shaman and hunters who are max level mail wearers and classic started with leather, and they also progressed, which is a cool progression. But yeah, it's only been shamans and hunters wearing mail since essentially the start of the game as sort of their end game armor, and now we're getting our third class finally wearing mail, so we stop DEing or letting that stuff rot, which is cool. So they will wear mail, which is awesome. That's fun. And we really don't know much beyond just this. Like, we know they're going to have a healing spec, we know they're going to have a damage spec, we know they're going to wear mail, we know that they're going to be mid, they say the word mid-range, which to me just means they're ranged. No one has been able to explain, like, all the interviews ask about this, and they're like, well, they're not like super long range like hunters, but it doesn't mean they're like going to have their own little 25 yard clump from the boss and where you're going to put all your invokers, right? It seems like they're just not going to have that 40 yard range set of spells, probably in the 30 to 35 yard range, right? Which is fine.
Yeah. It's, I kind of understand it, because at some point, the kind of animations you can do for the dragon breath and stuff like that kind of breaks down for 40 yards. So there's like an animation issue, because the part of the reason that Evoker is a Drakthyr only class, and I can pull up actually some of these GIFs that they've got on Wowhead, is that all of the abilities are tied to you being a Drakthyr, you having, like, you are a dragon.
Yep.
Like, so you can do dragon breath. You can do, there's this flying attack where you literally like strafe people and you breathe fire on them. And that sounds like it's going to be a nightmare animation lock thing like I-Beam is, but you know, it looks cool. It looks super cool.
Yep.
So, So, there is an animation issue there where, like, if you're 40, 45 yards away from the boss and you're like doing this breath cone in front of you, is it going to hit anything? But then again, like, there's literally dragon's breath on Fire Mage that is a cone. It's not a 40 yard cone though. It's just like 20 yards in front of you or whatever. So not all of them, that I guess the restriction is if it's a rotational ability, you know, and it's shorter range, then that's the range you effectively can play at.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So maybe that's why they said mid-range. We'll see. And the other interesting thing about their abilities is they've added this, or they've talked about this thing called empowered abilities, which essentially is, like, depending on how long, it's an ability you can charge up. You basically can hold the button down, or I think they said you can either toggle it, right? So it's either you hold to charge up, or you toggle it to charge up and toggle it off, depending on.
They actually talked a lot about accessibility. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the accessibility options is, like, you have it in this power. So the way it works is essentially you charge up the ability and then you unleash a stronger version of it the longer you charge it up. And whether that's through holding the specific keybind down, or it seemed like there's a way to do a toggle where you can toggle it to start the power up and maybe toggle it again to execute it or trigger it. It'll be another cool thing about empowered abilities. I actually enjoy stuff like this where it's like there's a game you play. Timing of, like, do I have enough time to empower this strong enough to make it useful, or should I, like, move out of this, like, breath the boss about to do and then use it, right? Yeah.
There's also the other way to think about these is, instead of it being like a spell that gets stronger, it's a spell where if you have to interrupt it early, you still get something. Like, if you think about hard casting a pyroblast, right? If you sit there for 4 seconds and you hard cast a pyroblast and you complete it, you get your pyroblast. Great. Part of the cost of it is that if you have to move early, you don't get anything.
Exactly.
You know, if you have to move after 3.5 seconds, then you get nothing. There's no pyroblast. You don't get, you know, 90% of a pyroblast. You get 0% of a pyroblast. Yeah. This is different because now if you get to 90% in power, this whatever ability, it looks like from the UI they showed this, like there's like the base level. If you just like push the button and
tap it
and let it go. Then there's one level where you empower at like 30% and another one where you empower at like 2/3. And then maybe there's extra things for empowering it fully. But, you know, if you don't get to empower it fully, you still get 2/3 of your ability or 1/3 of your ability. So you still get something if you have to move early. It, in some ways, it lets you get away with being a little bit greedier. Unless you absolutely have to get the max empower off, then, you know, you can... you can start casting. Maybe you get targeted by something. Maybe a puddle spawns under you and you just have to move and you can just, you know, fire off the ability and move and you still get something.
Right. Yeah. And it's, I think too, like it depends, like the interesting thing, at least from like looking at this from a healer perspective is like with the assumption being like the mana cost will generally stay the same depending on the empower, then you basically, you give up efficiency for like getting something off quicker in these cases where like you're using it without the full empower, which is something that like Mistweaver to an extremely less extent sometimes sees with like canceling Essence Font early since you still pay the full mana cost for that upfront, or using Vivify with like one or no renewing miss out just because you need something to top someone off, which is a terrible idea anyway, but like you could do it.
Yeah. There's existing things like this as well, where if you, in some way, like the idea of empowering an ability, like of sometimes you have an ability that's more efficient or less efficient. Like we're getting into very like spiky territory here, but
yeah,
you know, if you think about like going into a cooldown window, a lot of classes have this thing where you set up for your cooldown and you push all your cooldowns and you do a ton of damage. But if you don't get to do your full setup, you know, there's this opportunity cost of like, you know, you don't get to hold down the button for 4 seconds prior to doing your cooldown. So your cooldown is not as good. Something like Touch of the Magi for an arcane mage is very sensitive to your setup. If you have a great setup for it, Touch of the Magi is just like the godliest ability you could push. If you don't get a chance to do your setup, it's like pretty medium.
Pretty weak.
So Berthier has this in chat. So Ian said it's a mix between preservation evoker is a mix between a Resto Shaman and a Disc Priest, meaning stacked healing and a lot of absorbs, which is apparently giving them nightmares about Siege of Orgrimmar.
Yeah, which I mean, it's, yeah, like, yeah. It's just, absorb healers are just the bane. Like, no. So here's the thing about absorb healers, and like, if they actually go this direction, it's going to be slightly upsetting, particularly if they harken back to Siege of Orgrimmar or any, like, Warlords of Draenor style absorb healer, is that they're both awful to play and they're awful to play with. They're awful to play because literally all you're healing is like putting up shields. So as long as you put up all your shields, there's nothing else to do. There's no like reactivity. It's all proactive. And number two is everyone else on your raid team hates you because there's literally nothing to heal if you do your job and put up all your shields. Like,
yeah, it's a little bit like Spirit Shell and Castle Nathria, right? If you had a good Disc Priest, they could do the ramps, like on Sludge Fist, if you had a good Disc Priest, they could get off their ramps every minute for every pillar. Nobody else needed to touch those. You had massive shields on the whole raid, and I actually had set up my raid frames at the time to show absorbs on people, and just seeing all the absorbs like blow up after they got there, like you'd see all the atonements pop up, and there's like little shields out, and then they like hit all their buttons and they Spirit Shell, and it's like whoom, the whole thing.
Yeah. And that was one, like there was, you know, people who remember older content from a healing perspective, like that's a very good example, but imagine that just being the way that a Disc Priest healed all the time. And there was no ramp for it. There was just hit shield every 3 seconds.
So the other thing is stacked healing.
Yeah.
Like imagine if it's your Eflow and your Eflow puts out barriers. Like if that's how it works. That's a lot more limited, right? If you can stack, then it's pretty good.
Right, yeah.
But if you can't stack, then you're getting, you know, four people get shields. Your melee clump gets a shield, but you can't do the Disc Priest thing of like, oh, the whole raid has bubbles.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's just, it also then, like, that class is going to be dependent on raid fight design, right? Because, yeah. Like, you'll notice there was not a ton of shamans in the raid this tier, primarily because right. I think Holy Priest and
Holy Priest is so good. And like, there wasn't a lot you could stack for. Like, Bragalon exactly. needs you to be spread out. Helandris needs you to be spread out. Lords of Dread needs you to be spread out. I don't actually know if the Jailer needs you to be spread out, but there's certainly not a whole lot of time that you can just stand still and plant.
Exactly. So we'll see. But no, it'll be interesting to see what this healing class looks like. Because, like, I mean, the last new healing class they added was the Mistweaver Monk. And to be fair, at launch, like, it was a very good healing class. I think it suffered from the biggest thing Monk suffered from
was smart healers. Or smart heals. Smart heals. Can't talk.
That, and you had to level it from one. So that's actually the biggest deterrent, I think, is, like, you had to level that class from one. This is a hero class. Sorry, that's the other thing. Invokers are a healer class.
You're going to start at level 50. Let me actually pull it up. You start at level 50. You level through Shadowlands. Oh, you start at level 58. So it's very much like Demon Hunter. Demon Hunter, if you remember when Legion came out, it started at level 98. You did your class starting zone. You came out at about level 100 and you jumped straight into Legion zones and you leveled to 110. Right?
Yep.
Am I getting the levels right?
You do, yeah. Similar thing with Blood Decay, right? They started it, I think they were a little lower, like 55 at the time.
Yeah. But you had to do the scenario. 55. You would come out at level 58 and you would do your 12 levels or your 10 levels through the Burning Crusade, and then you would go into Northrend.
Oh, that's right. Different. You're right.
Sorry. So this time around, you're not going to have to go back through the Shadowlands zones. You're going to be able to just jump right into the Dragonflight zones on your Evoker. It is also, they are initially starting with the old style Demon Hunter and DK cap of one per character per realm, or per account per realm. So you're not going to be able to make, you know, 10 different evokers on your realm on launch. But with things like cross-faction play coming, it's not going to be as big of a deal.
Yeah.
You're not going to feel the need to make like an Alliance one and a Horde one. You can just make a Horde one or make an Alliance one and play with everybody. So,
yeah. No, yeah, that is the, yeah, I guess that's a good news that they don't start as low. I think that's the one thing that has hurt Monk for a while. Yeah. And it's much less of an issue now, but at least its initial player base was so small just because you had to start at level one, which I spent too long before that getting free level ups from the old recruiter friends.
So. Yeah, and there was the old, like, I think this is gone now, but the old Monk experience buff, I think they took that out with the leveling revamp.
I think it's actually, I think the buff is still there, but it used to give you stats too. So I think they took out the stats portion of it, but I don't remember.
Well, it was like a 50% experience buff that you could just have.
Right.
But it was set up differently. Like, you could have it for an hour a day, but if you went a few days, just like going back to the peak and just turning in the quest, you could stack it up for like a day's worth of it, but you had to actually log in to do that. So it was something where, like, if you logged out for, you know, 3 or 4 days and then logged into your monk again, you still only had an hour of it.
Exactly. Which
is the other thing. I think that was it should have just been, you could have a day of it every time you turned in the quest, and it just like would go back up to a day. It wouldn't stack duration or anything like that. It would just let you have the buff, the XP buff.
Yeah. But that's true. All right. There's a question in chat. Maybe we do that now, and then we can. There's one other thing I wanted to touch on one of these final interviews before we end. So there's a question in chat coming from Kyle Renfro. Thank you, Kyle, for the question. Kyle, of course, asked. They asked last week. To be fair, Kyle, I don't remember your question, but I remember people asking about, does Ancient Teacher of the Monastery. The question last week, I think, was, will it be built into the base class? If they were, we were rework Mistweaver. Almost positive. My answer at that point was no.
I think it was during our speculation episode.
Oh, probably, yeah. But then the question, the follow-up that Kyle has for this week is essentially, do I think that ancient teachers of the monastery will become a talent now that they're going to revamp talent trees? And I'd say there's a pretty good chance ancient teachings makes it into the talent tree. If anything, like as just an option, I think it actually ends up. So definitely in the talent tree and probably its own square. I don't think it ends up being one of those hexagons you have to pick between ancient teachings and something else. I think it just becomes something you can talent into. And also from my perspective, I bet you it ends up being fairly mid-tier in the talent tree. It does, like ancient teachings to me isn't a starter talent, isn't an ending talent. It's probably something that'll be in the middle. Something you can pick up and then go elsewhere in the tree. So
as far as positioning, I've been leveling a mage recently. And it's funny how the fire spec just doesn't work until like level 35. Like it just doesn't work because it takes that long for you to get enough crit talents that you can actually like cast a pyroblast without sitting there for a million years. That's it takes awesome. That long to get your second charge of fireblast and make it castable while casting so that you can actually like do combustion and not have to sit there hard casting a fireball during your combustion every single time.
That's hilarious.
So like this spec has issues where it just doesn't really work until you reach like level 35 and then suddenly it becomes like pretty fun. Something like ancient teachings, I don't think they're going to put at the end of the tree for that reason. They're going to want to put it earlier because it's some one of those like core playstyle things where like imagine if they put, you know, all of that fire stuff in order to make combustion work was at the end of the tree. Like now you really can't play fire until level 70. Same thing with ancient teachings of the monastery. They're going to want to put that maybe not as a starter point, but you know, 5 or 10 levels in instead of, you know, 40.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's definitely like a mid-tier type talent, but it'll definitely be a talent. I think it's just, they just enjoy it a little too much. It's becoming core to Mistweaver more and more. And to be fair, like I don't mind this iteration of like, cause ancient teachings is a play on eminence, which eminence was like the original talent. I don't think we'll ever get eminence back just cause it's too passive. Well, yeah. I mean, they've gotten away from this whole, like the ability of just like having passive healing for doing nothing. Right. And that's what eminence was. Yeah. It's like you put down a statue and as long as you were auto attacking, you got healing on it. And at that point it was smart healing. So it would heal like your lowest HP, you know, party member. So now it's, I think they leave ancient teachings where it is and they leave the activation. You have to hit something to activate it and then use it. I wish I would get rid of essence font, but that's a different conversation. But no, I think ancient teachings ends up in the talent tree, probably mid tier. So
I do think that they basically, I think there's a two step litmus test that you can do to decide if some piece of borrowed power is going to end up being a talent. Mm-hmm. Test number one, was it popular? If it wasn't popular, it's not coming back.
Yep.
Or it's unlikely to come back. If they needed to fill out a tree or serve some purpose, then it could. But if it's not popular, I wouldn't bet on it. Two, was it problematic? So you can see like an example of this. Convoke the Spirits is in the Druid talent trees that we've seen. Popular, not problematic. There's like some PvP problems with it, but they solve those. Ravenous Frenzy, not in there. Not super popular, but very powerful. So powerful in such circumstances, such like broad circumstances that it was actually problematic. I don't think it's coming back. Like we obviously haven't seen the whole tree, but I would be shocked if Ravenous Frenzy is in the tree.
No, that's fair. Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. I can't wait for Alpha to launch and we can actually start to see what their initial thoughts are on trees. So
yeah. Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, I know we only have 5 minutes left and there was one other thing I wanted to touch on and it's really just a portion. So Ian was interviewed by Asmongold this week, which is actually a very good interview. I think people give Asmongold a bad rap, but I think he actually is a very smart individual when he's not playing Asmongold as a character on stream. In any event, the one question that Asmongold did ask was around master loot. And Ian's response was actually one of the better ones that we've seen, which is maybe we give Ian too much of a hard time. So his response was essentially like, Ian as a person kind of wants it back, but WoW as a team, they've sort of been resistant to it. And the idea is basically the reason that master loot went away and why they went fully to personal loot is what they were talking about was the idea of, I guess at the time they were maintaining two different loot systems, right? Like they were maintaining, there was a personal loot system along with master looting, and the ability to switch between the two was causing too many headaches from a technical perspective. They basically said, of the two, which one do we keep? At the time, the team said, we want to keep personal loot, shift everybody to personal loot. So what Ian's basically point was, like, the door is not shut on ever going back to master loot, but if they go back to master loot, there's going to be like, it's an all or nothing thing. So it's not a master loot plus personal loot, some sort of hybrid. It's like, well, maybe you have personal loot. His example is maybe they have personal loot in open world content, but master loot in any sort of instance, like organized content. And that's the way they go. But keep in mind that going back to full master loot does always come back to those situations that we used to have back in the day where, like, you might get drops that are unusable. Like, you might get a bow drop in a group that has no hunters. You might get three pieces of Nemesis gear, which is the Warlock Tier 2 set, with only one Warlock in the raid, and that Warlock already having eight piece, right? Like, there is the chance that gear just rots in your raid, which
already happens with personal loot. That's not a problem that goes away. Like, we killed Prototype Pantheon this week, and we got zero pieces of useful loot from it.
Right. So my contention is it doesn't go away. It seems like it goes away because you get to put loot where you want. Because, like, the idea with, like,
it's all feel.
I mean, yeah. Because, I mean, the idea is you can still kill, like, Prototype Pantheon the first time and get a bunch of those shitty trinkets that no one wants. And, like, what are you going to do with those? Like, you get three of them and you're like, well, essentially it's rotting and it's our first kill and we got nothing to show for it, right? Like, that's still an option where, like, in personal loot, you may get, like, an item level upgrade for a certain piece for someone. You know, generally personal loot comes with more loot. So, like, you're going to be generally less pieces of loot across your raid and master loot potentially. So
I think the idea initially with that was, and I don't know if they would actually do that again. The idea was that personal loot was less efficient. So you got more loot to compensate for it being less efficient because you couldn't give it to specific people.
Right.
I think the idea that personal loot is less efficient is outdated. If you're not optimizing personal loot, if you're just a regular Joe guild and you're not optimizing personal loot, it is less efficient. But I think the level of splits and the kind of splits that have been done have demonstrated that it could be dramatically more efficient.
Right.
If you're setting things up in order to abuse it. So I don't know. Like, this is definitely an area where they have to be thinking about regular guilds and not what the world first guilds are going to do. Because most guilds are not, like, if your heroic guild does personal loot because they don't want to deal with master loot drama, which is probably correct, then, you know, they maybe should get more loot because it is going to be less efficient for them than running master loot. But yeah, he did comment on, quote, there's a lot of problems with it in terms of training rules and items that are technically an item level upgrade, but aren't actually an upgrade. This is me quoting from the WoWhead article that's quoting Ian Hezekost is. Yep, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see Master Loot back. Even as, like, not a top tier guild or even like a middling, like, mythic guild, like, it does still feel bad, like, when I get an item that I know I'm never going to equip and I can't trade it. Like, it sucks getting a helm that I can't trade. Like, I got a heroic helm for my tier set, which, like, I couldn't trade because I wear like a legendary in my helm slot, but I can't trade it. I haven't gotten it before. And so it's just like, I don't know, it kind of sucks. For that. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they actually go back to master loot. I'd be excited to start to bring that back. Too. I think it's fun. I think that's maybe time. That was the only thing. So, and the Asmongold interview covers on some other stuff. So go check it out. It actually was a really good interview, but that was the big thing that Ian had. And then of course the whole what sword. Yeah. Which makes me think maybe we're going to do something with that sword.
Maybe so. But I think that is going to bring us to the end for this show today. Thank you all for watching and for listening. If you enjoyed this show and you want to support it and the other work that we do over at the Pika Serenity, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/PikaSerenity. But that is it for the show today. Thank you all for watching, and we will see you next week.
Bye.